Back together again, you and I chatting it up. Brand new week, Monday style, July 20th, 2026. Right here on Connecticut Today, we started talking about an issue that never seems to fade away, maybe getting rid of the state's local property taxes on motor vehicles. Wake me up when that happens. Also dropping by, local gasoline analyst Mike Fox, ConnecticutNewsJunkie.com columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill, and Republican State Senator Jeff Gordon with a happy update on something we discussed with Jeff the previous Friday. Well, are you all ready? You ready for another edition of what we love to do in Connecticut is bitch and moan about things and never really change anything? Are you ready for that? We have three issues of that today, so let's get right to it right here. WICC 600 AM, 95.9 FM and online, voiceofct.com. Alex Putterman's story today, and I know we've talked about this over and over and over again, but when I cracked open today's edition of the Connecticut Post, I said, well, what might we talk about today? And voila, you got this. The car tax. I know I hate to do this again, but I have to, because it'll be proof that we don't get anything done in this state. The car tax is the worst. Could Connecticut finally ditch its most unpopular tax? Story here by Alex Putterman. He points out a lot of stuff that we have talked about for years and years and years. Economists say the tax is confusing and regressive. Lawmakers have tried, without too much success, to overhaul or eliminate the system. Towns value. It's your city and town that doesn't want the car tax revoked, right? And, you know, it's... A few days ago, July 1, we all got our car tax bills. Thank God I have one more payment on my car and I own it. Thank God. And I was pleasantly surprised when my car taxes in Wally World, you know, I opened the thing up and look, and it was $217. I can handle that. We'll do that. So finally, I get to stop paying for the car next month. I have one more payment due in about 10 or 11 days. I'm going to wait for, who finances my car? Oh, Connex Credit Union. I'm going to wait for Connex to send me what I need to see, and that'll be it. And I'll frame that title somewhere. No, I won't. I'll just throw it in a pile of papers like everything else in my house. A confusing mess of papers and books in my house. But remember Joe Franklin, the old guy on WOR, his office? His office is my house, but I digress. So at least in another 2 weeks, I will have stopped paying for my car. But I will still, you know, for years and years and years, I expect the thing to get me at least another 5 or 10 years the way it's been running. It's only a 2019. It's only 7 model years, and it's a very durable brand of car. I'm not going to say what it is, but I'll be driving it until I'm paying, you know, like $40 in car taxes or something like that. Dr. Fred Carstensen, the Connecticut Center for Economic Analysis at UConn. I've interviewed Fred numerous times over the years. Even he says that the car tax is the worst. That's why we ought to get rid of it. Okay, Fred, I get you, but how do we do that? How do we do that? So we'll open up with the car tax today. Love to hear your thoughts on it. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Connecticut, of course, what a shock when you read this paragraph. Connecticut is among a minority of states that taxes motor vehicles alongside homes, businesses, and other property. And see, this sentence, folks, bears it out. In this state, a lot of our leaders on both sides of the aisle are full of zit. I didn't say the bad word, but they're full of it. Oh, this is regressive, and we have to get rid of it. If it's so GD regressive, and it's so bad for poor people, and if everybody hates it, then why do we still have it? It's not like we haven't discussed this for the past, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years. And again, what a surprise. It's not like Connecticut's in the minority of states who do this. Of course they do. Folks, I don't know how many times I have to tell you. The leadership of this state, especially on the Democratic side, they are full of it. Don't believe a damn word that they tell you. Well, we need to get rid of the tax. Yeah, we need, and I need to fly too, like super freaking man. It ain't going to happen. Each car's owner's annual tax is figured based on the value of the vehicle and the mill rate of the town where it's registered. Again, another dumb system. Another asinine system that we're going to talk about over and over again. Oh, we have to get rid of the car tax. It's so awful. Yeah, but it's $1 billion a year. Where do you get the money? Look. We are never going to get rid of the car tax. I know they made an adjustment on it a couple years ago. That's frosting on a rotten cake. It is ridiculous that you have to keep paying a tax over and over and over on something whose value doesn't change because of where it's parked, or as the Brits would say, where it's garaged. You know? I could see property taxes, on homes being figured on the value of that home and the assessment, and again, location, location, location. I get that. I understand that. But my God, I have never been able to wrap my arms around a system that says, you know, my middle-sized, boring, white guy, suburban Italian sedan is valued in the town where I live at one fee versus two or three towns over where it's higher or lower. It is ridiculous. How did we ever get started on this? But again, we talk and we bitch and we cry and we moan and nothing gets done. State Majority Leader, Senate Leader Bob Duff, Democrat Norwalk, said he sees significant political will to deliver what he calls a major tax relief to residents. Okay, Bob, then do it. He said, though, the problem is everybody would take a little flack from the municipal leaders. Yeah, which means we're full of crap. Either you do this or you don't. I'm getting damn sick and tired of every year doing this story because it's look, either leave the thing the way it is or make an adjustment to it or get rid of it. Stop it. Stop BSing us. You know, they say what they say in front of the cameras, in front of the reporters, in front of the radio microphones, but then when they get behind closed doors up at the Golden Dome in Hartford there, they say, geez, how do we make up for this revenue? And then the first selectmen, the first select persons, the town managers, the mayors, they all get on the phone to their delegation and say, don't you do it. And again, if it's good to stay, fine. Stop lying to us and telling us, well, you know, we're really going to get, that car tax, that's got to go. No, it doesn't, because you've been shoveling the same crap at us for a decade on this. Just be honest. Just be honest. ~12 to 15% of many town budgets come from the car tax money. How do you make that up? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. 12 to 15% of your town or city's municipal budget, on average, comes from the car taxes. You want the car taxes gone? Okay, how do you make up for that money? You tell me. Yeah, you can set your watches by it. You can set your sundials, your computer clocks, whatever. At least once or twice a year, we get a story. And I'm not blaming Hearst for running it or doing it. It's a good story here. But geez, oh, Pete's. Well, you know, we should get rid of the car tax. All right, we've been saying that for the last how many decades? And nothing ever happened. What's your point, Paul? My point is, just stop it. Stop thinking that there's an equitable way to get rid of the motor vehicle tax. There isn't. Again, in this Hearst story here, which is a pretty good story, 12 to 15% of the general revenue of a town, you know, the money that goes to pay teachers, paraprofessionals, EMTs, police, fire, municipal workers, 12 to 15% of that money comes from the car tax. All right, you get rid of that. How do you make it up? You can't. Without a mass revaluation or a 12 to 15% hike in your property taxes, you can't make that up. So could we please stop visiting La La Land? Can we just do that? I mean, but God forbid we figure out a way to do it. And you know what you should do? Just come up with a figure and assess the tax on a statewide basis. In other words, figure out in a given year how many registered vehicles there are in the state and take a figure and divide it into that and make it another fee. I don't know. Or either that. Well, Paul, you want another fee? No. But I would like it if our lawmakers stopped lying to us. You can't do it. Stop lying. Remember the first time around in 2015? Ted Cruz was lying Ted with Trump. Remember that? Little Marco, lying Ted, low energy Jeb. Don't lie to me. Don't lie. He lies. JR in Stanford leads us off today. JR, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I've listened to this, and I've got three things on the car tax.
First of all,
the reality is whoever is telling us that the minority of the states charge it, 25 to 27 of the states actually charge car tax. That's the majority. So if somebody thinks that we're in the minority by charging it, then I'm not really sure I want them handling my money if they don't know what's more or less.
The list I'm looking at, JR, says 21, but it's a lot anyway. It's you say 25, I say 21, but go ahead. Yeah, I had that list pulled up, but go ahead.
I did a search, and it said 25 to 27 of them charge car
okay.
tax.
Yeah, all right, so figure about half. Go ahead, yeah, yeah.
So, and that shouldn't really change us anyway. The other thing is, you're right, they're going to get the money someplace.
Yeah.
And right now, the car tax, if regressive tax means taxing people who make less income
mm-hmm.
more,
mm-hmm.
the car tax is actually not that regressive because in the state of Connecticut, depending again on your income, but if you're lower income,
yep.
basically the state gives you a tax credit for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the rich people that are paying enormous amounts of property taxes on their homes really don't get any credit for the car tax because if they're even eligible for mm-hmm. it, their house takes care of any credit they can get.
Got it. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
If you get rid of the car tax and it shifts to property tax on your home,
mm-hmm.
then what's going to happen is all the people that you're trying to protect are just going to see it show up in their rent because landlords
of course.
Are going to pass it through. So the car tax isn't really as regressive as everybody likes to pretend it is. It may be a pain in the butt to get it collected.
Yeah.
But that's different.
So, JR, what about a statewide flat fee? So, in other words, the value of your midsize sedan doesn't change as far as taxation is concerned, whether you park it in town A or city B. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that shows a misunderstanding of how it's actually assessed.
Mm-hmm.
The cars... Every town in the state of Connecticut uses the same values for the same cars.
Yep.
The difference is the mill rate that that town assessed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you wouldn't change the value of the car. That's the same for everybody. If I take my car and move it from Stanford to Greenwich, it's going to have the same value, and it's going to be because the state of Connecticut actually sends it to the towns.
Yeah.
It's just that the mill rate in Greenwich is $16 per thousand, and in Stanford it's $27.
And that's the point, though, in the end, JR, that I always make, is that, okay, I can see how that's equitable for a home, because they all say, location, 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 right? But why should the revenue-generating portion, essentially, of a car or an SUV or a motor vehicle or a motorcycle or whatever, why should that essentially be different from town to town?
Why shouldn't it be? If I own a 2,500 square foot house in Stanford, using your argument there, if I own a 2,500 square foot house in Stanford
mm-hmm.
and I own a 2,500 square foot house in Greenwich, why should I pay different?
Well, I agree.
It's where the car is registered.
Yeah.
And if you don't like your mill rate, then vote for somebody else in the town and have them change the mill rate.
But isn't the value? Here's my point, JR. We're running a little tight on time, but here's my point.
Yeah.
I can see that for a home because what do realtors always say, right? Location, 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 school system, whatever. An inanimate object like a motor vehicle, I don't see it changing its feathers or the value of it, whether it's parked or garaged in one town versus the other. You know what I mean?
But the value isn't changing, whether it's parked.
Well, the mill rate, the assessment, the mill rate.
But the mill rate isn't the value. The mill rate is based on the budget that the town has.
Yeah.
And if you live in Stamford,
yeah,
you said, okay, you people on the Board of Finance and Board of Reps, go collect the money you need to run
the
town.
Have people actually? Have people actually said that?
Well, I mean, if you don't know that you're saying that when you vote, then you probably shouldn't be voting because you're uninformed.
Yeah, JR, thanks, man. Good to hear from you. I got to let you go. No, I understand what you're saying, JR. You are giving local and municipal leaders a tacit yes to go ahead and handle my car as property, like my business or like my home. But a lot of people sit back and say, all right, really? Please? Please? Is that really necessary for my car? All right, let's look at some numbers here before our next guest, because he's a numbers guy. Right now, crude oil futures, the NYMEX number, the New York Merc, $82.53 a barrel. And what do I keep telling you? The mark you look for is 75. Above 75, things are tense. 75 or below, they're not too bad. And as far as the average gasoline prices here in the great state of Connecticut, first of all, nationally, $4.03 in Connecticut, it's $4.10. To talk about this and more, our buddy, our pal, veteran of the radio station here, Mike Fox from GASDA, the Gasoline and Auto Service Dealers of America. Hey, Mike, it's Paul. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Thank you for having me on again.
Always good, Mike. What do you see right now? Now we've kind of edged a little bit above $4 again. Oil is up. This is like the thermometer of tension, is it or is it not?
Oh, it absolutely is. And you were spot on with your analysis. And it was funny, as you were getting ready to quote the crude oil price, I had it up on my laptop and I'm watching it go up and down, and down, just in the 10 seconds I was waiting to listen to you. But yeah, you're dead on. We were at $70 not that long ago in April. We're now all the way back up to right now, $82.49. And that is the problem. That's the barometer we have to watch. That's going to tell us which directions gas prices are going. Now, you can look when we see this tension on whether the Straits of Hormuz is open or closed, and that seems to be driving the crude oil price up or down. When they say it's closed, they're attacking ships. Of course, crude oil is rising. The good news in Connecticut is all these oil companies, distributors, everybody knows, everybody's watching, everybody's looking. So I did a quick comparison. Where were we on wholesale prices when crude was at this number? We're actually about 56 below our high, which was on May 4th of this year. So they're holding back on that wholesale side, which is good.
And look, if you're Iran, you listen, as much as you may hate Trump or say to yourself, this is a war we can't lose, they still want to sell their oil. I mean, it does them no good, does it, Mike, to blow everything up, too, just to get back at Trump when they've got to make oil money some way, right?
I think the problem that we have, Paul, is we are not really dealing with what you and I would consider rational, right-thinking people. These are radicals. They hate America. They chant death to America in the streets. They kill their own people in their country. They don't really care if their country and their people suffer and get destroyed. As crazy as this sounds for me to even say it out loud, they're probably looking for that so they can blame Trump and use it as a recruiting tool to get one or two more people. I mean, we have people right here in America, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, I'm sorry. The Iran situation's been going on for 47 years. I remember the day I joined the Marines when I was 17, and I'm 70 now.
Wow.
Okay, we were talking about it then. Somebody has to put an end to this. I think Trump's perspective has been he really doesn't want to destroy the country, but you got to show these people we're serious. So if that's what it takes, we're going to do it, because we can't put up with another 47 years of this roller coaster.
You know, Mike, finally, in this scenario, people hear about Karg Island all the time. Is that the focal point here? Is that the choke point, if you will, of Iran's oil industry or not?
I think there's a dual. Karg Island is certainly very big. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems that you have is if you take out or destroy or cripple Karg Island, it's not the signing of a piece of paper that's going to bring Karg Island back online the next day. And I think that that is the thing that Trump is trying to avoid. He's trying to have something for the people to stand up and fight for. And really, regime change has to come from within. The people have to say enough is enough. I totally understand you don't want to stick your neck out if you're going to get killed, but isn't that how America was formed? Mm-hmm. Didn't we do that, I don't know, 250 years ago? We stuck our necks out. We fought the British. We did what we had to do to form a new country and a new way of life, and it worked. But I also understand when you're in the street and then the tanks come and just run you over, you know, you don't want to do that.
No.
So that's really where we are right now. And, you know, I think we've seen where Trump is. He's bombing every day. He's going to continue to bomb until there is nothing left. And then hopefully the people will get rid of the radicals or push them somewhere else. You know, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But when you have a religious zealot or people that truly hate you, the only thing you can do is take them out. And I'm not sure you could ever take them all out.
No.
And then you have young children that start out at, say, 10, 11, 12, and then they grow up and it all starts all over again. That's the problem with hatred in the world.
Mike Fox, as always, GazdaZone. Hey, Mike, thanks. Good to chat with you again. And we'll chat down the road, I'm sure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Mike Fox there with some interesting words. And, yeah, looking at the same numbers we are and what happens with Karg Island and all of that. Terry Cowgill joins us, ConnecticutNewsJunkie.com and Substack.com, talking about a couple of issues in the news. Terry, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm mulling that Pew poll that you cited about the approval for Hamas.
Yeah.
Among Muslim Americans, you said it was 47%?
44%. They did this a couple 44%. Of months ago. Yeah, it's frightening.
I would love to have been a pollster because I would have loved to have asked the respondents, what is it about Hamas that you like? You know, is it the raping of the women and children in the kibbutz or the bomber with the suicide vest walking into a nightclub in Tel Aviv? What part exactly do you like? So maybe it's just the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe you're right, Terry Cowgill.
Yeah.
I know a couple things you want to talk about. It was my lead topic today. Terry, you know this is never going to happen, probably never. But we love to hate the car tax, but we don't really know how to get rid of it and still have revenue for the cities and towns.
Yeah, so I started looking into this because, you know, there's a lot of states that don't have car taxes. You know, mm-hmm. and they find revenue in other ways. So I worked in Massachusetts as a journalist. I spent the last 9 years of my career up in the Berkshires, and I got to familiarize myself with the way Massachusetts collects revenue.
Yeah.
Now, what they do is, and one of the ways that Connecticut towns and cities could make up for the loss of revenue generated by the car tax is to allow towns and cities to tax other things than vehicles. And so what they do in Massachusetts is they allow the towns to add on to the state's meal tax.
Yeah.
So the state meal tax is 6.25%. They allow towns to add 0.75% to that, and they get to collect the revenue.
Mm.
Right? So there's also a rooms tax in Massachusetts, and towns may also add on to that. And I looked up the total revenue for both of those taxes in Massachusetts. It's $515 million. And it's about twice the revenue, about twice the size of Connecticut. So you could say maybe $260 million, something like that.
Yeah.
That would not replace the $1 billion or so that the car tax.
No.
But it might, you know, maybe you could lower the car tax. But, you know, the legislature in Connecticut and Hartford, they're very, very against giving towns and cities more autonomy than they already have. You know, and this would give them some self-sufficiency in terms of the taxes other than the car tax. But I don't see that happening. But I don't know why it couldn't, because there's a lot of other states where they allow this. But for some reason, we can't do it here. Only thing they can do is tax real estate and cars.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad. And it's, you know, like I say, Terry, unfortunately, I come on this show every day. I said, well, here we go, repeating another property for the 10th, for the 10th or 20th time. And we do nothing about it. Frustrating, I know. Very, very frustrating.
Very much so. They could, you know, you could also give towns the ability to put in a small local tax on gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of the towns along the Connecticut Turnpike, like Darien and Brantford, you know, that have two stations on both sides of the turnpike.
Yeah,
they would really see a windfall. And then other towns that don't have any gas stations would get nothing. So that wouldn't be ideal either.
not very equitable, Mr. Cowgill. Other thing you wanted to hit on today, which I guess has been stopped by a judge, is this mega media merger that our state attorney general, Mr. Tong, was four square against as well.
Yes. Well, it has been paused by a judge. I don't know that it's dead.
No, it's paused. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not Attorney General Tong's biggest fan, and I know that he is widely loathed among conservatives in Connecticut. I'm not quite sure why. He's just, you know, he's a politician, just like mm-hmm. any other attorney general. Mm-hmm. But he is against this, and I have to say that I agree with him. I think it gives too much market share to one company.
Yeah.
Because Skydance, as you know, already acquired Paramount. This would give them, if they acquired Warner, would give them a 30% control over this industry.
Sure.
And you and I are both news guys, right? So this would be especially bad for the news business, because it would put CNN and CBS under the same umbrella. And you and I know that they're not going to remain separate for long.
No.
I'm sure, you know, they come into this any meeting with the regulators, the Ellisons do, and they say, oh, no, you know, they're going to remain separate. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
It's just not efficient. And so eventually, either CBS or CNN will go away, or it'll become a new news network.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad for consumers, no question about it. It just erodes competition. And the last thing that business needs is less competition.
You know,
so,
Terry,
hats off to Attorney General Tong.
I don't want to sound like an old white guy, even though I am. But, Terry, I got to tell you, you and I long for the days of three networks and PBS, and that was it, right?
Well, I wouldn't quite go that far, but, it is so complicated now.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I mean, television, I mean, you used to have cable TV, and then maybe you would have an HBO subscription or something like that.
Yep.
Now you need, like, all these different subscriptions just to watch one or two shows. It's insane.
Yeah. Terry, it's not good, man. Terry Cowgill, our buddy, our pal, read his stuff in a couple of places. The Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com and or substack.com. My favorite title of any blog on the planet, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Terry, thanks, man. Have a great week, and we'll chat next week, sir. Thank you.
All right, Paul. Talk to you later.
All right, there you go. Now, you remember last Friday it was, we had two guests on, both asking people to help use their voices, maybe donate for two things. The little dog Squiggy is said to be on the mend. Squiggy in the valley a couple of days ago was accidentally, and the reason I use accidentally, it was a reaction from one other dog who beat up Squiggy pretty significantly when that dog's owner, sadly, I guess, passed out and dropped dead while the other dog was being walked. And then Squiggy came by with his human, and he was beaten up pretty badly. So we're still taking donations, not we here at Connoisseur, but the Shoreline Veterinary Hospital in Shelton. Contact them and see what you could do to help Squiggy, because the anticipated medical bills, the vet bills, were going to be something like $5,000 to $7,000. And we also talked to this gentleman who, as a physician and a member of the Connecticut political body, was upset with a preliminary denial of a major three-organ transplant to one of his constituents out in the eastern part of the state. But I guess we have better news. Dr. Jeff Gordon, a Republican state Senate member, eastern part of the state. Jeff, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
How are you?
I'm good, Jeff. And I guess we have some good news about your constituent out there. Let us know what's happening here. What do we have?
Well, we have very good news. I appreciate the comptroller working with me, and the comptroller has decided to override the continued insurance denials for this gentleman's life-saving transplant surgery. So this is really good news. A big shout-out and thank you to you, Paul, and to your listeners for getting the word out, and to the community in Stafford, Connecticut, who has really been wonderful coming together and bringing this to light and really trying to push the insurance companies to try to do the right thing. But I'm glad we were able to get things squared away, so that way the insurance can now cover this surgery for our gentleman, who's a retired Department of Corrections officer for the state.
Jeff, as a practicing physician, I'm sure that you are reading up on this, obviously, and this is a very complex three organ operation, not to be done here, but at the Cleveland Clinic, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's a highly specialized organ transplant surgery. Very few places in the country do it. And what got me upset as a doctor is I deal with insurance denials every day in the work I do. But to deny someone life-saving surgery when highly specialized transplant surgeons are saying that this is what they're recommending to try to save this man's life, this just shows why we have to keep fighting for patient care over profits and get the insurance companies to do the right thing. And I'm glad we were able to work with the comptroller and get this decision overturned. And so now it's approved.
Yeah, and Jeff, finally, I did not know that. The role of the comptroller here in dealing with these cases, explain that a little bit from a legal point of view. How does that work?
Well, the comptroller's office does have some jurisdiction overseeing the state employee health plans, so that there is oversight there. And I appreciate the comptroller having taken time recently to talk with me, not just as a senator, but as a doctor. And I'm glad then working together, we've been able to override the insurance denials. And so there is that role. And look, in cases like this, where we're trying to get life-saving treatment done for somebody, we have to look at all options about what we can do to help people. And this is just one example of why I keep fighting against insurance companies and denials by various case review companies. Because they're looking at profits, and I'm looking at patients, and we can all agree we need to help people, and that's really at the end of the day. So this is a big success story, but it's just not a one-and-done thing. Sure. There are many people in Connecticut who are experiencing a lot of issues, and I've worked over the years to make things better legally with the laws to rein in insurance companies.
Fabulous. Great stuff. Dr. Jeff Gordon, also, besides being a member of the Connecticut State Senate, a practicing physician, so he sees these things from all angles. Hey, Jeff, congrats on that, and keep us updated here on the progress of Justin Oswell, okay?
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Dr. Jeff Gordon right there.